Mr. Kiwanis will cheer you here at this point, so if you could just hold on for one moment. As soon as you get all hooked up, we'll be ready to go, sir. Sir, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Can you state your full name and ADC number for the record?
Glenn Michael Redby, 50764.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31-412A parole hearing to consider regular parole, absolute discharge, and home arrest. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. You can see us on your video conference screen. I'll begin with me just because I'm the individual sitting closest to you, so to speak. My name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel chairman for this hearing. Next to me is the Honorable Mr. David Neal. At the center of the bench is our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. After him is the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. And on the opposite side of the bench is the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. I'll begin the hearing with a summary. Mr. Glenn, it's Redby. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Glenn Redby, ADC number 097247. Oops, I need to make a correction, so I apologize for that. It's 050764.
Yes, sir.
Thought I caught that. He's 53 years old. He was certified eligible by the Arizona Department of Corrections for 31-412A regular parole, absolute discharge of home arrest. The crime of murder in the first degree occurred inside the Department of Corrections on or about December 6, 1986. He was approximately 22 years old at the time of the incident offense. He was found guilty by jury trial on April 1, 1988 and sentenced on May 25, 1988. He's been parole eligible since April 7, 2013. Mr. Redby has a criminal history dating back to 1984, including a string of misdemeanor convictions for theft, burglary, and assault, all of which resulted in probation and a 3.75-year prison sentence for felony theft. It should be noted that the incident offense represented an escalation in violent behavior. Mr. Redby was granted regular parole on July 23rd, 2013, which was later revoked in a special hearing on August 2nd, 2016 for violations including several DUIs for methamphetamine. I will read a brief summary of the offense in question. On December 6, 1986, during the early morning, Mr. Redby was in the cell area at the Wilmot Prison Facility in Pima County. He was allegedly drinking homebrew with two other inmates to celebrate his pending parole, which was scheduled a month away. After drinking for over 2 hours, Mr. Redby began mopping his cell area. When Mr. Redby was near the victim's cell, he became involved in a verbal confrontation. According to witnesses, Mr. Redby entered the victim's cell and shut the door. Shortly thereafter, he exited the victim's cell and immediately took a shower. After Mr. Redby completed the shower, he looked inside the door cell window to inquire about the status of the victim. Then he requested the assistance of another inmate who picked the victim's locked door. Mr. Redby re-entered the cell within a few minutes and re-exited the cell. Mr. Redby again took another shower and changed into new clothing. This incident occurred in the late morning around 11 a.m. Correctional service officers discovered the victim's body in his cell. He had been struck repeatedly, about the head with a blunt object, and his throat had been slit with a razor. Also, a pencil was found embedded in the victim's neck. According to Mr. Redby's institutional progress report, he has had an impressive amount of programming in ADC, including the completion of 5 courses in 2017. He has a detailed release plan, which includes acceptance into a halfway house and continued programming. He's not had an infraction in ADC in almost 10 years. although he had considerable discipline from 1984 to 2008. This appears to be his seventh hearing before the board. He has one letter of support in his parole packet from a family member. I'll make sure that if you have additional letters, I apologize if they got mixed up, but I know that there's been past support. And we also have a Ms. Sharon Hayes, who is in the hearing room today, who looks to be supporting Mr. Webby. Is that correct? Okay, so I'll make sure I'm correct on that. Mr. Webby, this is your first time before most of the members of this board. We'd like to get to know you. Can you tell us about the offense that resulted in incarceration and related parole revocation? Thank you, Mr. Wayne.
December 6, 1986, like you said, we were sitting around just celebrating my going home. And
children along their ride if I do wrong. So I try
get out again. I'll never forgive myself for what I did to you. Never. But I've taken classes, I'm gonna talk to these kids in here, and they all know my story. And I told them how stupid I was, and how idiotic. You think all what I did is an ongoing mistake, because that's not a mistake. A mistake is leaving your keys in the car. Killing a man is stupidity. It's heartless, it's cowardly. It kills me inside to this day. It does. I've walked away hundreds of times, like I said, from work, as you said that day, and have not acted in that way. The day I was drinking that day, I've not had a touch of alcohol since that day. I've been alcohol free. And I'll never touch alcohol as long as I live. Just like drugs, I screwed up. I was over 20-something years drug-free. And then that happened. My baby's mother got sick, and you guys, I wanted to spend as much time with her as I could. You know, the doctor told me her cancer, ovarian cancer's not the knife. You guys know that. I thought she was going to die, you know? I was not running around town partying. I wasn't stealing. I wasn't running. I was spending time with her and my kids. I worked. I came home. That's no excuse, believe me. I'm not trying to tell you that's an excuse, because it's not, because everybody has problems and they don't do drugs. And the only I kept saying, well, you know, I'm not hurting nobody. I'm home. But you know what? I was hurting somebody. I hurt my family. I hurt everybody that believed in me. I hurt Mr. Thomas and Mr. Robert in 2013. I hurt my little girl who has to cry every time she gets a visit because her daddy can't go play with her toys. My son, because his daddy can't play the new Xbox game with me. I must have all that woman sent in front of you, Sharon Hayes. She needs rest. She needs a break. She needed me. And I let her down. And just like she told me, if I get out, that don't mean I'm coming right home to her and her children. That's something I have to earn. And that's what makes her a wise woman. I can't take back what I did to Leon, man. Believe me, if I could, I would. I die of heart every day. That's something I would have to explain to my kids. And I don't ever want that day to come, but I know it will. My son knows I hurt somebody. He knows that I'm here for that, but and I told him it was something that should have never happened.
Mr. Reggie?
Yes, sir.
If I may, because I think, and I'm saying this as one voting board member and the panel chairman for this hearing, my guess is that you probably made a very compelling argument, if you will, or justification for your release back in 2013. And regardless of how we vote today, I would like to put some positivity into this hearing. You were doing quite well in your rehabilitation up to that point. You were outside of the prison walls for 3 years. It sounds like you went through some personal strife. I guess what I'm concerned about, and I'm not suggesting that I'm concerned about this for the rest of your life. I am concerned about you dealing with the possibility of alcohol or drug addiction and managing that. But what I'm not understanding is why you wouldn't know that using hard drugs while you were on supervised release was at risk. risking your freedom. I mean, we could sit here and be judgmental, but we see just so much addiction out there, and we know it's a big struggle out in the streets for people. But what happened that would lead you to think that you wouldn't be violated if you went down that road? Am I making sense?
Yes, sir.
What happened?
Sir, when I knew, excuse my dirty ear, it's stupid. I mean, now I know it's stupid, but back then I didn't know that. And it makes no sense. I was standing in the waiting room at the hospital. My baby mother just came out from having her entire insides full of cancer taken out of her. And the doctor comes out, he's standing in front of all of us, telling us, I mean, just a bunch of stuff that doesn't make sense. So I got up and I followed him to the elevator, and I told him, look, sir, I'm this doctor, I don't understand. Just be honest with me, man. What's going on? And he looked me right in the eye and told me, just spend as much time with her as you can and be there. I even told me she was dying, you know? I would. I was working during the day, I was coming home, I was just falling asleep on the couch, on the bed with my daughter, and she was alone. My baby's mother was alone. She was fighting for her life, and she was alone. And in order to be alone, I know I was getting away, but in my head, I wasn't doing nothing wrong. I said, you know what? I'm not going out picking the homes. I'm not robbing them. I'm stealing. Yeah, I'm not.
Mr. Whitney, if I may interrupt you, I want to commend you for that. You weren't returned to the Department of Corrections for committing major crimes, property crimes, or violent crimes. You were violated for using methamphetamine, and I'm just... I'm a little perplexed as to what happened with your personal compass, so to speak, that when you're talking about the awful thing that your wife was going through, it seems to me that you did the very thing that was going to take you away from her. So I'm not trying to chastise. I'm trying to figure out what went wrong, because should this board vote to return you to the community, I'm going to say that people are perfect, but we're going to really want to believe that you can be safely returned to the community without returning to some sort of addiction or alcohol, because it's an embarrassment for this board when we take a chance on an individual, especially with a major violent crime, to return them to the community. And this is what happens. So I'm not here to take the light out of your eyes and say that this is how the board's going to vote today or every time. I'm trying to figure out where you're at. Where have you arrived? Because I do commend you. It looks like in 2017 you did quite a bit of program. And that's a very positive statement. I think some of that programming had to do with substance abuse, if I'm correct.
Yes, sir.
We did Thinking for a Change, which I understand is a very, or Thinking for Change, which I understand is a very, very good program. Where are you at now, and why should this board consider returning you to the community?
So, I thought that I was doing the right thing. I thought I was able to help. And all I did was hurt. My baby's mother needed me out there, and my twin drugs did nothing but hurt. I didn't clean, and I will be clean for the rest of my life. I don't do drugs. I've been drug-free for over 20-something years, and I've been drug-free I have never dealt with a situation with hers before, and I don't know wrongly. I've taken my care of Dr. Lester of the mental health and the drug programming. I've taken the classes. I realize I made an idiotic decision by doing drugs. I thought she was dying of that, and I wanted to spend as much time with her as I could. And that was the whole thing, and that was stupid of me for even thinking that. But that's what I thought. I listened to the doctors, and all I did was hurt. All I did was hurt her. I stared at her face every time she comes to see me when I know she needs rest. And I will continue programming on the streets. I will go to drug programming. I will drop UAs every day if that's what my parole officer wants. I will not touch drugs again. I told the parole board in 2013 when they said that alcohol played a major role in what I did, putting me on board. I gave them my word I would never touch alcohol again. I never tested positive one time for alcohol. And I have not touched alcohol since December 6th, 1986. I've been clean. And I will never touch drugs again as long as I live. I told the parole board then that they'll never see me in this place again. Mr. Thomas knew me. He knew my character. He knew me from yard. He knew me from out there. I never lied. He knew that. That's why he took a chance on me. Only thing I did was came back, and I feel totally horrible for breaking my word to Mr. Thomas. But I've never in my life faced cancer. I've never in my life even, let alone with the woman I'm in love with, or the mother of my children. I handled it poorly. I handled it stupidly. People have that problem a lot, and they don't do drugs, and I understand that. I just didn't want to sleep. I wanted to be there. And that was a bad decision, because all I did was hurt. I kicked myself every day for day by day, and calling her and her trying to rest, and my daughter's being noisier. Luckily, we were blessed with an amazing son that helps. I will not do drugs again. And if you ever see me in front of this board again for drugs, you don't ever have to let me out. And I'll never sit here and beg you to give me another chance, because I'll tell you, I won't deserve it. I won't.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. Well, I think this is a good time to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you. Thank you, sir. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
So I understand and you know, all sympathy to the wife and what she had to go through. But so you were in prison for theft, is that right?
Yes, sir.
And you came before this board, and this board granted you parole, is that right?
Yes, sir.
And prior to you being released on parole, you committed a murder. I'm trying to understand, what is it that all you had to do is not get in any trouble and you were going to walk out prison, and you were only there not for a violent crime but for a theft. And you committed this violent crime, which it says that the victim was struck in the head repeatedly with a blunt object, his throat was being slit with a razor, and a pencil was found embedded in his neck. You were in jail for theft, so I'm really trying to understand that. You're in jail for theft. What is it that could, you know, get you so irate that you would murder someone knowing that all you had to do is walk away and you would have been released from prison? You had your release papers. You were ready to walk out of prison. This board had granted you parole.
I was walking my floor. I was walking backwards, going towards the run, because I still home from on the floor. I bumped into Leon Bowen. He was walking down the run. I didn't see him, and I turned around and told him I'm sorry. And he said, "You're effing right, you're sorry, punk." I said, "Hey, man, I said I was sorry."
cell, and you went into his cell.
Well, he told me he'll be right back. He said, I'll be right back. And I thought he was going to get something.
And you went into his
cell. No excuse, because Leon Bowen is not here to defend himself. I mean, I say that is, I don't mind it, inappropriate and disrespectful to him.
Well, what I'm saying is that you went into his cell, so you could have went and closed the door on your cell, and it would have been done.
Well, I said, not back there, because everybody can pop doors. The inmates can pop everybody's doors on the run.
Okay, so...
Sir?
So you went up with that. You blocked the door, you bumped into a guy, you guys had words. He told you that he'll be right back. He went into his cell. You followed him into his cell, closed the door, and killed him. When you had an opportunity to be this boarded and given you the opportunity that you were going to be released, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, now after serving 25 years, this board granted you release again, and you were out for 3 years and hadn't gotten in any trouble, and then your wife had some medical issues, and you turned around and started using drugs. And what I'm trying to understand, sir, if every time something happens in your life, if you're going to resort back to committing some type of crime of using drugs, when you were on your way out and you committed a murder, you were out and you started back to using drugs because you're right. And I do understand, because we go through that when our loved ones have some type of medical illness, but I'm trying to just understand, sir, that you give up your freedom so easily.
The first, you know, he was an American. I think it's important that it's known, even though nothing can be done about it right now. I think it should be addressed. It should be addressed. I know that it makes no difference where a person comes from. But I think it's important that you're going to use this, because I am asking as a town possibility for this parole, as a condition of this parole, that he continues to get some kind of therapy, because he was horribly abused as a child by his father. She was a horrible alcoholic, and she treated him for drugs and alcohol. And he was brought up by his mother. His father was not present in the room. He even had investigated at one point for some abusing gun, sexually in other ways. Nothing ever came about because his father told him, if I find out gun related this to me, you can find it on me. If he ever found out that his mother heard him, that he would kill him. Well, a six-year-old mind, you don't want to see your mother get killed. And I truly, in my heart, believe Glenn is, he went in as a young man, afraid, a scared young man. And yes, I went through the confrontation with the man, and heard what he said, but I believe there is more to it than what he is letting me know. And I don't believe he's hanging out with his story because he just doesn't think it's going to make any difference at this point anyways. And really, in prison, I gather you're not supposed to come out and tell on other inmates for things. There are precautions for that. The only thing that I can say is that he's been a good, he's been the only father in my son's own home. And he's played with my son loves him, she loves him a lot. I love him a lot. I would love him and he would have him who would support him to him. And his son is born, it's a Christian woman, and they went to go to church, and I'm not sure exactly what all they do there, but they, as far as I know, they can help him to get a job, and he can live there until I just feel like the first time that he was released, he was expecting kind of like a prodigal son, where we were treated with open arms and welcome, and that's great, and he was. I mean, they were wonderful support, but it ended up that I was pretty much his only support. I'm a generous person. I think you can help a person out, you know. I mean, you can't turn it off on people if they need help. I can't do that in my conscience. But sometimes, unfortunately, it seems like in life, family is the one to turn around the quickest. And they're the righteous judges, too. They were very demanding of them. At times, Glenn would come home, he had a welcome job, it was a well-taught job, especially in the summer. He'd come home, and his sister straight up would expect him to come over and fix his little lawnmower for him, you know, before he even had a chance to sit down. And it became even what he was doing under the feet. This is the kind of opinion that he had. The man, I have to say, he can't explain why he did what he did, because he is, I'm sorry, but he's not. He said he was stupid, okay? And I believe that a commission another condition that you think of really is education. I believe that Glenn is not a violent person. I believe he was scared. I believe he has a good heart. I believe he can be productive in science, and he was fragile. And he was very stricken with grief and having loss and judgment. And it wasn't a I am going to commit, and that's not why I'm saying here now. It's because of drugs, and I think you can continue with some sort of therapy or some sort of we have whatever it takes, and I leave that to your discretion, but I will promise to help you in any way I can. And it was important with the ways that he was so lacking before. Because I just don't know the support. And we have a daughter together, and we got to visit Glenn, and I have a picture of us all together, and I don't know if you want to see
that. Well, if I may, I just want to make sure I'm clear on something. He's talking about the medical issue that happened, and whatever it is that led him down that road of abusing drugs. Were you the individual with medical problems?
Yes, they caught it at stage 3. It was stage 3 of my cancer, and I had, if you know anything about cancer, the normal range for tumor markers is 35. I was up in, I had 2400 was my tumor marker range, and it has since gone out to 17, and it fluctuates between, but I'm doing well now. It's prescription pills that I take for it. I take it for a day. But I'm not in chemotherapy anymore, and I'm working, and I work the Bible School, it's a Christian organization, and I believe in it, and I work with the children. What else can I say except I want to say it doesn't make sense to you. And it didn't sound right to me, but I want to clarify for him. He says that his father was helping. He was in some room. I had to live with my aunt to go receive treatment. Because Salem was way out of no man's land, and that was the only place that we could afford to live at the time. So he was out there because he had a job. He had to work. And so I think maybe, I can't speak for him, and so maybe I shouldn't, but he said he was trying to help and wanted to be there, and I think that's what he's trying to say, is he wanted to be able to just not go to sleep, to be able to come see me if he needed to. I don't know if it's noticed or whatever, but yeah, it was not a good choice. And I hope that you will forgive him that. He was not thinking clearly, and I believe he was under a lot of stress. We had just lost our home. The man that we rented from, Gary Gordon, that's a he tried to arrest my son. And it turned out that the man that we rented from, that Gary, he was not even the owner of the home. So when we came forced out of that place, and it was just a series of events that you know, before that we lived in Tomopile, where we took over, anyways, I'm sorry, I got too much of a time, we lost the home, we couldn't afford the septic to fix it or whatever, and it was just a mess, just a lot of things happened. And she went out of time, he made a mistake.
Ma'am.
And I'm hoping you can forgive him for that.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, and I'm certainly not trying to hurry you with your testimony, but I think you're bringing up something that's an important question, and that is, have things stabilized since, because you talked about the home situation, bad
landlords, to say the least, based on the way you described it. So have things stabilized since in terms of, I know we're talking the possibility of a halfway house, but as far as him, as far as the possibility of transitioning back to the community, is, would he be transitioning back to a stable environment?
Yes, I mean, I'm stable. I went home there, it was not home, it's an apartment. I was, when I first met Glenn, the reason why we moved out to begin with was I was in subsidized housing, and he couldn't not live there, and I didn't feel comfortable having him. You know, he's married once in a while, but we were not, he was not allowed to be on the lease. So we moved out then, and we found a place together, and I was pregnant at the time, and we tried to make a go of it. We were engaged, we were finally getting married, it just seemed like one thing after another. He was working, he had a steady job working for, what do they call it? He's always had, that's another thing, he's always worked. He's always found work. He's always managed to find work, and no matter what. And he held us together for a very long time. And it was called peaking. I don't know if you remember it now, but he did work. He was a go-getter, is what I'm trying to say. And he wasn't not working at all. And when we met, he had a steady job, but for some reason, some of the other employees started getting more hours, and they didn't allow him to work as much. And so that then, you know, when we first moved in, we thought that was okay. And just seemed like one thing after another. I have a place myself now, and if need be, you know, if I can temporarily, I can put him, he can stay with us. I would have to clear up my landlord first, but he's already made a mention to me that he's been accepted to.
Yes, no. I didn't mean to get past that. It was more of all the stress, you know, leading up to the event, and I wanted to know if things had stabilized, because that's probably an important factor.
The stress with
me was... Well, there was the medical issue, there was housing, all these issues. And I am going to ask you to sum it up, because I think that we are kind of running out of time.
My health is, you know, yes, my health, regardless, for myself, from my perspective, the way that I cope is... I think cancer is one of those things that you kind of try to, you have to deal with it in your own way. And for me, I try to just live one day at a time and face the world the way it is, and I don't expect the same from them. And if he can do that, if he can continue to live life and go out and face the world for what it is, instead of learning about what tomorrow brings, I think you'll be fine. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, ma'am. Okay, Mr. Webby, we're getting close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us. I recognize there's been quite a bit of dialogue already, but this is your hearing. So is there anything else that you feel you need to share?
I when I was 19, you guys want to know, when I was 19, and what Sharon was talking about, there was more to it, what happened on that day. I didn't want to be a toy. You know, I didn't. I don't want to be a toy no more. When you say that I made that comment, I thought you made it too big time. I wanted to brag about killing the unborn, but that's nothing to brag about. I meant by, I don't have to worry about being raped in this place no more. You can't go to the cops because they don't care. Not back then, now they do. So I never did what I did. I was scared. I screwed up. But I know I've never let it happen again. I've never touched alcohol again. And I will never do drugs again. And I'm sorry for hurting you, Sharon, and for abandoning you. And I swear, I will spend the rest of my life making it up to you. And boy, and I apologize for making you even have to go through all of this and deal with this when you've given me an opportunity once. And I will not let you down. I'm paroling the church on the streets. I've already signed in for 6 months. Drug testing, you can't leave the facility unless you're working for them. And after I graduate the program, they help you find jobs and living quarters. And I will not screw up again. I'm sorry for what I did to Leon Bowen. I really am. Because he did not deserve it. But I was a kid that was scared. And I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wegby. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like we're speaking with you directly, but is the board discussing the case amongst itself under the open meeting laws of Arizona? So if you'll just remain on the phone, we'll come back to you shortly with our decision. Thank you, Mr. Wegby.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Fellow board members, the board is now in discussion. Colleagues, you heard quite a bit of what I already said, so I won't belabor this. I think there's a lot of commendation that should be given to Mr. Wegby for everything he did leading up to his initial parole. It sounds like that he was otherwise hardworking and productive in that interim and went down a very wrong path during a very tragic time. I don't want to make excuses for him by any shape of the imagination. I think my largest concern was why he would risk so much when so much was at stake. But again, he's done quite a bit in these last 18 months to 2 years, however long it's been since he's been returned to the correction system, to pursue programming. And I will say, as one individual voting board member, I am open to returning him to home arrest. I recognize that everyone's going to have their own opinion, especially when we're considering an individual that used hard drugs in the face of his parole, in the face of being returned to the community. But I see possibility, and that's why I'll begin the discussion. Yes, Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Pinheiros. I agree with you. I see him not ever using drugs again. But if we're going to grant him arrest, I want him to look at each one of these board members' eyes and say, I will not do that again. Because I am, you know, I would not want him to let this board down. And this is five people. He mentioned former Warden Thomas, who I know, it was on the board last time to let him out. I would take it very personally if he did it again. So, but that's my position.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. And I want to say, too, that in any circumstance like this, especially this one, when each board member has to make their individual decisions, I certainly respect where everyone falls on the spectrum, because there's a part of me that has some very hard feelings about individuals being returned to the community and wrecking that opportunity, and and possibly even bring the credibility of the board based on our decision-making. So I recognize, as an individual, what I'm saying, and I'm voting my conscience, but I certainly understand where everyone might fall. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
I disagree. I had an issue when he was released, and the board granted him parole, and he got involved in such a brutal killing. And then I would think that he would have learned that after serving the time for the murder, that he wouldn't have committed another offense. But that was a brutal crime. He's in prison for theft, and I ended up doing time for a murder over an argument, when he probably would have been walking out within the next few days, walking out of prison. And the other thing is, he was out of prison for 3 years, and he started back to using drugs because of the issue with his life, which I certainly do understand that. I mean, we go through a lot when our loved ones are ill, but the decisions that he keeps making I don't want to say a tragedy, but when something goes wrong in his life, it just concerns me that he would take those type of actions with the risk. And he said he knew that he was on lifetime parole.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Neal?
Well, thanks, sir. I'm going to say, I want to three instances now where family members have come down with cancer, and two of them didn't survive, and one did. I turned the drug, but I was not inclined to drugs, and when I spent more time than necessary drinking, trying to deal with the situation. So, you know, I'm not going to blame him when he did at all, but I can understand where that kind of situation could push somebody out of their comfort zone to do things that they wouldn't have normally done and not think about as great. But I have to go back to the fact that he, in 2013, he had made enough progress to convince the board to give him the parole. So prior to that parole, everything was, you know, good. Fine deal, and he did spend 3 years without reverting to drugs. So I'm inclined to give him a grant on the rest, especially with the Church of the Street at his desired destination when he gets out, because that's a very good organization. It doesn't allow much variation from their rules before they kick it out. So I would be inclined to agree with one rest at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Dr. Ray.
Yes, the responsibility of this board is to protect citizens of the state of Arizona and this nation. And you've given an opportunity. You did not take advantage of it. And when one embarrasses the board, although none of us was on the board at that time, I have to say, at this time, I'm not in favor of home arrest, general parole, or absolute discharge.
I'm going to continue the discussion just a little bit, then I want to wear down the board. I was a fan of the expression "right in defense," but I can't think of a better expression right now. And what I'm thinking at this point, like taking in the total discussion, it really doesn't change my position too much. But I'm thinking a bit more of a compromise not granting at this point. Perhaps considering not going with the set off. I'm just going to go ahead and make my vote and see what my motion and see where the votes land. And that is to say that regarding Mr. Glenn Webb, BDAC number 050764, to deny regular parole, absolute discharge of home arrest, but I'm not asking for a 1 year set off.
Second.
Agree.
I'll disagree.
I'll agree.
Seconded by Dr. Wright. Agreed by Mr. Johnson. Agreed by Mr. Neal. And disagreed by Ms. Rittenhouse. And I think I've made my complicated feelings known on this, and I'm not asking for a 1 year set off. Any disagreement? Again, the release type denied is regular parole, absolute discharge of arrest. And my reasons are as follows: serious and violent offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, am I correct that he violated probation early on when he was put in for that theft? Or I don't have to check that, but I will say that he had a prior criminal history, assaultive behavior, the nature of his crime. Unfortunately, I have to say, history of continued substance abuse based on the way that he was brought back to the correction system. He's had good institutional behavior, no recent disciplinary infractions. History of assaultive behavior. And I think that's all I have. Does anyone have anything else that they want to add? Okay, Mr. Webby, today the board voted to deny regular parole absolute discharge of home arrest. Four agreed with one disagreed. We're not asking for a 1 year set off, so you'll be, within about 6 months, you'll be certified by the Department of Corrections to appear before this board again. Again, the release type denied was regular parole, absolute discharge of home arrest. And our reasons were serious and violent offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, history of continued substance abuse, history of assaultive behavior, prior criminal history, history of assaultive behavior inside the correction system dating back. And I have no further reasons for denial. Did you understand our vote?
Yes, sir.
Okay, will the Department of Corrections will be certifying you in approximately 6 months to appear before this board again. And we wish you safe and continued programming inside the Department of Corrections. This will end our hearing for today. Thank you, sir.
Sir, can I say one thing to the Madam Chairman, the lady? I just wanted to tell her, ma'am, thank you, and I will look you in the eye, and I will look the gentleman in the eye, and tell you I apologize, and I will never do drugs again, and I'll see you in 6 months, and thank you.
Thank you. Good luck, sir.